Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys. A partner men can count on. Online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Julian. So last week, we saw Chinese Premier Li Keqiang spoke at the World Economic Forum in Tianjin, basically underlining the fact that China is still a profitable place to invest. Do you think that China is in a need to push for more investments currently?
Well, I do think there is more pressure on them to try and attract more inward FDI at this time, particularly, you know, because of their management of the renminbi. And that the fact that they're facing more and more capital outflows. And so in order to offset some of those capital outflows, they're looking to try and attract more inward flows. And I do think that, you know, after a couple of years in which sort of liberalization of foreign direct investment seems to have slowed, they seem to have, you know, started to pick up the pace again. And last year we saw a series of measures to open up new sectors to FDI. So I think that, you know, we have seen a shift recently, and they are pushing more hard to attract those foreign firms into China.
Is there any specific areas that they're trying to target? Are they trying to target more Western companies? Are they trying to target other Asian countries to come in to attract more investment inflows?
Well, I think that they're welcome to all foreign investors. I mean, they're particularly keen on sort of attracting investment from other countries in the region. Particularly when it comes to Central Asia as part of their Belt and Road plan. But I think that, you know, that they're welcome to all kinds of expertise. And I think they're beginning to sort of shift their focus perhaps slightly away from manufacturing and more towards the service sector, which is why we're starting to see some investments in areas such as healthcare and IT and those sort of areas. So I think that... overall, though, what they're really looking for is expertise in those sectors, which they hope will drive the economy going forward. So high-tech, service sector, those type of areas.
We saw one pharmaceutical company is putting down about $350 million of investment in China. Do you think that this will be a boost for the pharmaceutical business in China? And also, do you think this is one of those one-off things that is not part of the services sector kind of rejuvenation? It's still part of a new manufacturing. And do you think many of these companies will continue suit to follow these pharmaceutical companies into investing in China?
Well, certainly, I mean, the investment from Pfizer is more on the manufacturing side. I mean, at the moment, China is still mostly, you know, most attractive as a manufacturing hub, just given the supply chains there and the relatively low labor costs but skilled labor force. So I think they still have some way to go at attracting, you know, foreign multinationals to sort of focus on the service sector. One issue is just simply the regulations and the competition with state-owned firms. So, for example, in the drug sector, there's been a lot of issues with price controls and also government procurement, foreign firms sort of being seen as a disadvantage when it comes to, selling those drugs to the big state-owned hospital providers. So there are still certainly some issues, some barriers there. I think they're going to probably have to do more to encourage greater foreign investment in the service sector, but they are making progress, I think.
Following the Brexit vote last month, many countries are trying to manage their investor perception under this growing economic uncertainty. How bad or was China kind of insulated following the Brexit vote? Do you think that the Chinese premier trying to address this investment issue at the World Economic Forum is part of that mitigating factor of, well, put it simply, damage control? Do you think it is bad for China that Brexit is happening?
I think it's bad at the margin. I mean, fortunately, China is relatively well insulated from the impact of Brexit. I mean, it doesn't have huge economic ties with the UK, particularly on the trade side, where the impact is probably going to be felt hardest. And if you look at how Chinese markets have responded, you know, they've fared pretty well. They haven't been that, they're not as heavily influenced by global sentiment as other markets. And you can see, you know, the Shanghai Composite is already back above the levels where it was pre the outcome of the vote. So we're not seeing much of an impact there. I think that the biggest impact of the Brexit vote has probably been to test the People's Bank's management of the exchange rate, because obviously there's been significant volatility in the currency markets with the dollar and the yen in particular gaining a lot of strength. And that's put pressure on the renminbi to fall, given that they're now managing it against a trade-weighted basket. So I think that's where most of the concerns have been. But I think that, you know, we've already seen that the People's Bank has been intervening to try and stabilize expectations. They've gotten a bit better at communicating. They've come out and said that they're not planning a long-run devaluation. I think that at the margin should help to stabilize expectations. So overall, I think that, you know, in the short run, there's been an impact on the currency, but I don't think Brexit's a major factor for China.
You mentioned that the PBOC is trying to have a better communication going forward. Indeed, that has been the criticism in the past. Do you think that the PBOC is trying to manage this perception better? What kind of communications can we expect from the PBOC, at least in the near term, at least in this week or so? Will we see them communicating more effectively to the market?
Well, I think that they're certainly trying to move in that direction. I mean, their communication was incredibly poor last summer when we had the August change to the renminbi fixing regime. And then again in December when they moved over to the new trade-weighted basket. In both instances, they kind of published a statement only when they were making the move. I think now, you know, they're moving towards giving a bit more advance warning of policy changes. And also just, you know, taking a higher profile in meetings globally. I think, you know, people like the PBOC governor, Joe Xiaoquan, are starting to take a more prominent role. For a while, he wasn't even seen in public for a few months, but that's now changing. You know, he's more sort of vocal about what's going on with the currency. But I think, you know, in the long run, what we'd really like to see is more sort of a more structured approach, similar to what other central banks do, where they have scheduled meetings and they post the minutes of those meetings. I think we're still some way off that, but I think, you know, they are moving in that direction. They've already shifted their monetary policy framework closer towards a sort of Western style framework, where they seem to be now targeting the interbank rate. If you look at the interbank rate, it's been incredibly stable recently, much more stable than in the past. So it does seem like they're moving towards a more modern Western monetary policy framework.
Yeah, so with this in mind and with the statement that you just made just now about 5 minutes ago on the strengthening of both the renminbi as well as US dollar, how do you think the management of the exchange rate as well as the currency direction of the renminbi against core currencies like the British pound, Japanese yen and others?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, we're probably going to see some further strengthening in the renminbi against the pound and probably some slight weakening against the yen, just given the safe haven flows towards the yen post-Brexit and also, the continued weakness in the pound. But obviously the key exchange rate will be the US dollar one, and that's sort of what the People's Bank is going to be looking at. I think that a lot will depend on what happens to the dollar. I mean, we think that probably markets have been quite complacent about how fast another Fed rate hike can come back on the table. Well, I mean, we're already seeing the Brexit volatility can't, you know, die down a bit. You know, if we have a few good months' data out of the U.S., certainly by the end of the year, we could have another U.S. Fed rate hike, in which case we're probably going to see some further dollar strength. Now, the question is, how does the People's Bank respond to that? I mean, if it continues to try and keep the trade-weighted exchange rate stable, that would mean further depreciation against the dollar, which probably would spark some concerns, I think, in global markets about a depreciation. Now, our view is that probably they might let it fall a bit, maybe to 6.8, but they'll probably not want to spark too many capital outflows. So if we do hit the 6.8 level, I think they'll keep it stable at that point.
Thank you. That was Julian Evans-Pritchard, China economist at Capital Economics. He was on the line with us from Singapore.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys. A partner men can count on. Online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.